This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Welcome to the Universal Joint Podcast. I'm entertainment writer Jim Hill, and my co-host Dustin Fuse and I are recording this podcast on Wednesday, July 25th. It's been a busy couple of weeks for the Universal Parks, Dustin. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. From, you know, news coming out for Halloween to news of, you know, just day-to-day theme park stuff in Orlando and in Hollywood. It's actually been a really fun couple of weeks.
Well, fun would be the word that the people who were at Universal this past Saturday night would describe, the 90-minute wait for them to get back to their cars. Well, I'll tell you what, why don't we start with that story? All right, as I understand it, I've been able to put all this together from police reports and press accounts. Back on Saturday, July 20th, at around 8:30 p.m., a motorist who was driving by on I-4, and I have to assume, Dustin, that this he had to be westbound, you know, because, you know, those are the lanes that are closest to the Universal Orlando Resort's two massive parking garages. But anyway, this motorist reaches out to the Orlando police and reportedly tells a representative that they've spied someone high up on one of the parking garages with a rifle. And okay, so immediately the Orlando police contact security officers at the Universal Orlando Resort, and then acting out of an abundance of caution, the Universal team members then stop all guests who are on the walkways headed back to their cars in the two massive parking garages. And with the idea is that they wanted to give the Orlando police and Universal's own security team the time necessary to do a full sweep of the two parking garages, you know, what is it, four or five floors? I'm forgetting.
Yeah, they're significant pieces of architecture, that's for sure.
Yeah, and so again, that they're attempting to seek out if this is true, whether or not there's an individual with a rifle up there. By 10 p.m., when no person with a rifle is found in either garage, the lockdown is lifted, and guests are then allowed to return their cars. And Universal and the Orlando Police Department have been relatively quiet about the incident since then. Dustin, forgive me for saying this, but I, you know, it was one of these things when I heard that somebody driving by at 8:30 saw somebody with a rifle up on the parking garage at Universal, I couldn't help but think, wait a minute, 8:30, Orlando, that's starting to get dark. And I actually checked to find out when the sun went down on July Saturday, July 20th. And it turns out any one of us can do it. I'm going to just Google sundown, you know, Orlando, July 20th. And what you get is that sunset happened at 8:23.
Sure.
Look, I don't want to say hoax. I'm going to lean in the direction of maybe a well-meaning individual who spied something in the dwindling light. But yeah, you know, that I just feel bad for the thousands of people who were held in that area. In fact, the interesting thing is you can go on Twitter and see, you know, all these videos that folks took where they're standing body to body and they don't have a whole lot of info. And they're wondering what's going on and why can't I get to my car? Anyway, I tell you what, let's shift to a happier story here. In fact, you were nice enough out ahead of today when we were recording today. You'd found all this great video of the grand opening of Jurassic World: The Ride over at Universal Studios Hollywood. Now, what's kind of interesting is that this attraction's officially been open since June 21st, is that right? I want to say.
Yeah, the official and unofficial and Twitter and Facebook accounts of it's open, it's closed, it's open, it's in soft open, was very confusing for a lot of people. And when we were trying to figure out, okay, what's the grand opening? When are they going to, you know, have all the grand opening merchandise and everything like that? There really wasn't anything. We knew that there was going to be a grand opening, like ceremony when they were going to bring out the stars of the film, but to flick that switch between it's in soft open to it's open, basically happened by way of a Facebook post on the Universal Studios Hollywood page, where they basically just said it's open. Very, very funny for locals who, and let's be honest, Universal Studios Hollywood is very local, driven by a lot of their attendance. And most people were like, oh, it's open, I'm going to go tomorrow. But it was the people who were huge Jurassic World fans that were like, I want to be there very, very soon because it's going to be awesome. But there was no specific date.
I can't help but, you know, do you remember when Bob Iger was talking about he was so confident in how Galaxy's Edge was going to do that they weren't actually going to buy any television conversions. They were going to do the same thing. They were just going to put, you know, something out on Twitter and Facebook like, it's open.
Yeah, and just flick the switch and, you know, it would do all the marketing itself.
I wonder what that means in the bigger scheme of things that Universal did that with Jurassic World. Well, anyway, all right, back to the grand opening the other night.
Sure.
This was Monday, July 22nd, and we had, as you mentioned, Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard, as well as Jurassic Park director Colin Trevorrow. But again, you've been eyeballing all of the videos that were taken that night, and there was a nice, you know, moment that Chris Pratt sort of channeled his character from the Jurassic World movies and basically horse whispered the walk around blew the raptor character from the parks. But you caught something, I guess, much funnier. When they the actual opening moment when they exploded all the fireworks?
Yeah, and for people who have been at Universal and Disney grand openings, you always have to anticipate that there's going to be some sort of a fireworks display. Unfortunately, they didn't really tell Bryce Dallas Howard about it, or didn't give her a clue or a sign, you know, nose tap or something like that, be like, hey, just an FYI, this is gonna happen, because she's getting set for this amazing photo op with Blue and everyone, and then all of a sudden, probably 15-20 feet behind her, this huge display of fireworks just shoots off. And in every video that I watched, you could hear the audible scream that she put out. And you know, I feel for her because I have been that close to fireworks before, especially the large ones. Anytime you're at, Illuminations or Magic Kingdom or really any sort of fireworks display, they pack a little bit of a punch and you don't really get that from a video. But seeing her go through that motion of what's that was so awesome. And she laughed it off like a pro, which was great.
Good. Okay, here's hoping that perhaps in the gift bag they gave her as she was leaving, there was, you know, a fresh pair of Jurassic World undies. Anyway, let's see. Okay, so we're talking about Chris Pratt sort of horse whispering the walk-around version of Blue. And you and I talked on a previous Universal Joy podcast about the walk-arounds that are done, the new walk-arounds that would...
Yeah, Juliet.
Yep.
Juliet, Triceratops. There we go.
And the interesting thing is that one of the reasons these things look as good as they do is that they were built by the puppeteers that work with Michael Curry. Michael Curry, for those of folks who don't know, he's the gentleman who did the puppets for The Lion King on Broadway. He did the amazing puppets for Finding Nemo the musical at Disney's Animal Kingdom. If you've been in the Universal parks and seen those amazing Transformer walk-arounds, those are Michael's work as well. It's kind of interesting, you know, that I think the thing that Michael's best known for these days is that amazing Maleficent, the dragon float, from the Festival of Fantasy Parade at Walt Disney World's Magic Kingdom. But the interesting thing is when you do something that's that big, that, you know, is, you know, lumbering down Main Street USA, It has to have a good, strong silhouette that you can see from a distance. And
yes,
the interesting thing, you know, you were talking about Blue and Juliet, is that these, you have to go the exact opposite. Because guests are going to be, you know, they are doing these up-close meet-and-greet, photo-op, selfie kind of moments. They have to be great from inches away. And so, you know, Michael's team did things like concentrated on making believably leathery skin, or, you know, very attentive, you know, eyes that, you know, that would sort of take you in as you're standing there. And, well, while we're talking about eyes, you know, this kind of makes me sad, this bit of news. Just, what is it, back on the 19th, Despicable Minion Mayhem at Universal Studios Florida has joined the list of attractions that has gone from 3D to 2D. And, you know, I mean, we talked about this at a previous show, Dustin, that, mm-hmm. you know, some of this is, you know, its ease of use. I mean, some of it's financially based. You no longer have to, you know, have a cast member there distributing glasses or collecting them at the end of the show. Likewise, you know, the cleaning of them and that sort of thing. And also, you know, some of this also has to deal with, you know, all those guests out there who wear glasses or have contacts. And, yep. you know, the 3D glasses just don't work the way that they're supposed to. But I don't know. You know, there's a part of me that's kind of sad to see this go. You know, I remember talking with Mike West, the former Imagineer, who's done such amazing work for Universal Creative. And, you know, he loved it. Oh, Minion goggles. That's what these are. You know, so.
Which we actually, I think we still have that list going. Because mm-hmm. the last time we talked about this, you had your list of all the different attractions and what the glasses were called.
This is true.
You know, this is one of those things that, folks, you have to go back and listen to some of the first couple of Universal Joint podcasts, because we go through a lot of these things, and they're all callbacks, because it's such an awesome thing to look back at, you know, when we were right.
Yeah.
And when it went from 3D to 2D, the conversation that we, you know, discussed about the guest issues and the cost and that kind of thing. At the end of the day, if the same experience can be had with a 2D versus a 3D, then that's where it's going to end up going.
Yeah,
but yeah, 3D it's still close to my heart.
Yeah. Well, anyway, while we're touching on Universal Studios Florida again, okay, this show is going to be posted online July 31st. Which is just 5 weeks and 3 days till the Universal Orlando version of Halloween Horror Nights starts on September 6th. And while Dustin and I were away, back on July 18th, we learned, you know, again, there's been a rumor out there, but, you know, that there were so many of us just like, God, they can't actually do this. This is wishful thinking. But we're going to get a Ghostbusters maze. Which I kind of stuns me, you know. I've loved this franchise since I saw the first film in theaters back in June of 1984. You know, not so much a fan of the second film, but, you know, loved the animated series, and I even found a lot to like about the all-female rethink redo in 2016. And
yeah, the one with Melissa McCarthy.
Yeah, and you know, not to put too fine a point on it, but the next, you know, sort of reimagining of the series, Ghostbusters 2020, is now shooting up in Alberta, which just around the corner from your place, Dustin. Is that correct? Or
yeah, I think it's like a 3-day drive from me. Well, if you really want to make that drive.
And now, interesting to me that one of the gentlemen in the cast of Ghostbusters 2020, which, by the way, is being shot and written and directed by Jason Reitman, who is the son of Ivan Reitman, who directed the first film. But we've got Finn Wolfhard from Stranger Things. And now, when we were pre-gaming, you were mentioning that the Ghostbusters maze is going to be going into Soundstage 22, is that correct? Or
yeah, and then from there, because that was the old Stranger Things from last year, but as we're taking that next step towards adding additional Stranger Things elements, which is going to be 2 and 3, it makes sense that they're outgrowing that space. So it's almost like a domino effect. When something really works, the next year they'll give it more space. They'll move things around. But yeah, it looks like it's going into Soundstage 22.
Interesting. I'm wondering, you know, do we know yet where the Saint Stranger Things maze for this year's Halloween Horror Night is going?
The talk over on the InsideUniversal.net forums is that it's going to be over at Soundstage 25. But as we're getting closer to that time period where you're actually going to see construction go full stream ahead, and you know, actors being hired, and a lot of the marketing is going to start to show up a little bit more prevalent, seeing as though we're a week out of August, it's right around the corner. So as these things start to be more evident, just keep an eye out to our favorite Twitter account over at BioReconstruct, because I'm sure that he'll do flyovers.
Well, but the thing with the soundstage is, unless he crashes through the roof, we're not going to get any decent info that way. I don't know.
Very
just
true.
What kind of intrigues me is that the scuttlebutt is that this year's Stranger Things maze is going to blend story elements from Stranger Things 2 and Stranger Things 3, which, given that Stranger Things 3 features a full-size 1980s mall as well as a fun fair, it's just sort of, maybe they just needed more space to be able to pull this stuff off.
Mm-hmm. And to do both 2 and 3 at the same time, there's questions to go through my head of, okay, what will that transition look like when you're actually going through the mazes, when they flick that switch between 2 and 3? Mm-hmm. But I'm more excited about what was announced just yesterday, that the Killer Clowns are back.
Okay. Yes, they had perhaps the best scare zone at Universal Orlando last year. So
yeah,
in much the same way that in 2017 we had the Trick or Treat scare zone, which then got promoted to a full-blown house in 2018. Here we go. The Cheeto Brothers 1988 film gets its very own full-blown maze. And I'll be working this out in therapy for a bunch of years now. Just to double back, though, for a quick moment. I'm just thinking, they did such a nice job of propping Killer Clowns from Outer Space, the scare zone, last year. I'm hoping that some of those elements turn up in the maze. But likewise, to sort of pivot back to Ghostbusters, I mean, think about it. There was the Ghostbuster spooktacular attraction that operated at Universal Studios Florida from when the park opened in 1990 through 1996. And then after that came the Twister attraction, went into the same building, and I think Fallon's there now. It's always fascinated me that, in fact, I've got concept art from the original version of the Great Movie Ride for Disney MGM Studios that shows that for a time, the Ghostbusters were supposed to be a significant part of that attraction. And in fact, the particular moment that they wanted to do was having, your giant movie theater car, roll across the rooftop from the finale of that film. And, to your right was going to be the Ghostbusters, firing up their proton packs. And then to your left, a giant animatronic version of the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man was to show up. And they were then supposed to fire, their weapons over your head. And the weird thing is that Disney spent so much time designing it when they really, really should have maybe talked to the lawyers first and had them pursue the rights to that 1984 Columbia film, because Universal got in there ahead of them and snagged the rights. And Just
doesn't that sound very familiar to another, you know, boy wizard?
Ooh, that's an interesting point. Okay. Wow. All right. You know, which you know, and again, when Universal scored the rights to Harry Potter, that turned on a spigot of cash that poured out of the parks and resorts. And speaking of the parks making money, literally 15 minutes before Dustin and I sat down to start recording today, Comcast released its earnings reports for the second quarter of 2019. And it turns out the revenue that the Universal Parks and Resorts earned during that period increased by 7.5%, bumping up to $1.5 billion in earnings. So what's interesting is Comcast wanted to frame that, you know, to the effect of like, look, you know, this keyed off of higher attendance at the parks and increased guest spending. But to be honest, a lot of that happened because of, you know, the way the calendar, worked in this quarter, the way that spring break fell, you know, in a number of different territories in the country. And so there was higher attendance and more earnings just because of that, not because anything they'd done. I mean, face it, Hagrid's had yet to open at that point. There wasn't anything really firing mm-hmm. that. Speaking of other ways that Universal is going to be boosting its earnings, what entry fees, right? That's what you'd like to talk about now, Dustin?
Yeah, running Universal. So we talked about running Universal back when the trademark was actually filed. So we were trying to figure out, okay, what is it going to be? Is it going to try to compete with Run Disney? Is it going to be on both coasts? Well, after the success of the Despicable Me running Universal event, we have a new event that's coming November 16th and 17th of 2019, and it's the Running Universal featuring Jurassic World. This is going to be so much fun. So looking at the initial advertising that came out from this, and if you guys haven't seen it, go over to YouTube. Brilliant. What happens is a gentleman is running up to a table to get some water. And he looks down, and all of the water has the same effect that happened in the movie when the T-Rex was coming by. Funniest thing that you can imagine, I think, when you're looking at a running activity, why wouldn't you want to run away from a T-Rex? So they really got that right. Just a little bit of info going into it. So it looks like the event, they have a 5K that's happening on Saturday, November 16th, starts at 6 o'clock in the morning. Then they have the 10K going on Sunday, November 17th, starting at 5:30 in the morning. Just like Disney, they have all of the different packages and pricing. The 5K starts at $75, goes up to a all-day play package, which actually includes general admission to one of the parks. That goes at $169. They have a 10K starting at $109, going up to $203. They have the challenge, which is both, which... No, but I get it if you really want to run 15 kilometers over 2 days. I'm just going to sit back and enjoy my, I was going to say Dole Whip, but enjoy my butter beer and enjoy everything, all those cupcakes at Voodoo, all amazing stuff. So enjoy the challenges. They also have the 1K for the kids. And that's on Saturday at 7:30 in the morning. There's a lot of information. Head over to runninguniversal.com and definitely check out that advertisement, because seeing the look on the faces of the runners as they're in the Jurassic World, you know, race, realizing, oh, wow, there's a T-Rex right in front of me and I got to go the other way.
That sounds like a clever ad. Look, my pal Dana did the initial running Universal event and so enjoyed it, you know, that, you know, talked up how much fun it was to sort of, you know, run around the back lot and that sort of thing and get to see, you know, stuff that you've driven by for years. And it's not so much what's there but what's used to be there. And Tell you what, folks, when we get back from this commercial break, we'll talk about something that used to be on the tram tour out in Hollywood, and that is the Battle of Galactica. All right, and we're back. And look, here on the Universal Joint Podcast, we like to keep you up to speed on attractions that have just opened at the Universal Parks. So, you know, we've Dustin and I have talked at length about Hagrid's Magical Creature Motorbike Adventure. Any new developments on that front, by the way?
It's been quiet, which is actually a very good sign for their operations team. Mm-hmm. People are still getting on, still getting, you know, the thrill of going through that experience. And, you know, as long as there isn't a lot of rain issues, which, you know, we're in Florida and it's going to happen. I'm just hoping that, as you said before, it's all about the next month or so to really make sure that there's no operational issues going into the fall, because as soon as Star Wars Galaxy's Edge opens up, it'll be a different story.
This is true. We also like to talk about attractions that are under construction, like that Raptor-themed coaster that's being built along the edge of Islands Adventure Lagoon, just in front of the Jurassic Park Discovery Center.
And we do have track for that. So track has been spotted. It looks like it's going to be a dark color, black. You know, it'll look really good when it's in that section. But until we see, the track going into that area, it's all just hearsay and a lot of internet sleuthing, which I am a huge fan of.
Okay, cool. All right, but on occasion, we also like to take a look at ride shows and attractions that are no longer at the Universal Parks. And as I mentioned, that includes the Battle of Galactica, which debuted as part of the Universal Studios tram tour 40 years ago during the summer of 79. Look, it's not going to surprise you to hear this, Dustin, but, you know, Battlestar Galactica, the Universal-produced TV series that inspired the Battle of Galactica sequence in Hollywood's tram tour, was inspired by the enormous success of Star Wars. But here's the thing. The folks at Universal took how well Episode 4, A New Hope, did at the box office during the summer of 77 especially hard. You see, Universal had the option to make Star Wars as the follow-up to George Lucas's American Graffiti, which George made for Universal Pictures and was then released to theaters in August of 73. In May of that year, Lou Wasserman, the then head of Universal Pictures, turned down the opportunity to make The Star Wars, that's what it was called back then, The Star Wars, because Universal, over the past 2 and 3 years, it had 2 sci-fi films that hadn't really done all that well at the box office. There was Colossus the Forbin Project, with Universal Pictures released to theaters in April of 1970, and then Silent Running, which Universal released theatrically in March of 72. By the way, these are both fine films, by the way. Great, you know, late 60s, early 70s sci-fi films, but, you know, okay, for one reason or another, didn't connect with audiences. But anyway, Lou was a guy who, you know, just saw that as a pattern. And, you know, so it's like, okay, we for some reason don't make, you know, sci-fi films that connect with audiences here at Universal. And he also, after he read the 12-page outline that George had put together, he found the whole concept a little strange. That's evidently a direct quote from Lou. It's like, Wookiee? I don't know. And so, and Wasserman, more to the point, wanted Lucas's follow-up to American Graffiti to be a little more consequential, a little more conventional. I mean, he figured that if people showed up for American Graffiti, he wanted, you know, something less out of this world, you know. Anyway, May 1977, Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope, debuts in theater. And Universal, of course, realizes, you know, too late what they missed out on. And then, like everybody else in the business, Disney included, remember we got that wonderful cinematic masterpiece, The Black Hole, also came out in 79. You know, so they're hurrying to get a Star Wars-like project of their own. And so here comes Glenn A. Larson, who had been sort of kicking around an idea for a show that at various points was called Adam's Ark. You know, just this sort of telling, you know, vaguely biblical story, but in a futuristic science fiction setting. Anyway, Universal cuts a deal with Glenn. And initially what Glenn really wanted to do, and it's kind of interesting to look back on it from what they wanted to do versus what happened. Glenn, you know, because again, to live in our age now where you have things like Stranger Things, where you have, you know, a series that literally will run for 10 episodes or 8 episodes or whatever, you know, a limited series rather than, you know, something that's on 7, 8, 10 years. What Larson initially wanted to do was what he called the television event. He wanted to do a trio of TV movies. And so, you know, in September of 1978, what eventually began to be known as the Battlestar Galactica pilot, the Saga of a Star World, you know, just... Wow.
Oh,
you can
come
hear
on.
The Lucas, you know, literally the noise you hear was the sound of the 20th Century Fox and Lucasfilm lawyers, you know, getting in their cars, you know, to drive over to Universal. Anyway, show was 148 minutes. That's 2 hours and 28 minutes of airtime. And, you know, but here's the thing. Saga of a Star World cost $7 million to make. To put that in perspective, the original Star Wars Episode IV, New Hope, cost $11 million to make. This Battlestar Galactica pilot was the most expensive television program ever made up until that time. Anyway, we jump ahead 2 weeks, the very next week, and Lost Planet of the Gods, which was supposed to be the second Battlestar Galactica TV movie out of the proposed trilogy. But here's Universal looking at how much is this costing? You know, and it's like, oh, no, we're not doing this as a series of movies. We have to make more money off of this. You need to do this as a conventional television series. So literally, as the second movie is airing, Larson announces that they're going to be transforming Battlestar Galactica into a weekly series, you know, with, you know, traditional hour-long episodes. Anyway, other side of the fence in MCA Recreation. This is the arm of Universal that's in charge of the theme parks. Jay Stein sees the Battlestar Galactica sets, you know, walks into the soundstages, sees these things being made, and it's like, oh my God, the folks who come to the park are going to love this. We need to put something on the tram tour that, you know, that plays up Battlestar Galactica. And so he turns to his team at MCA Recreation, and they're like, Jay, you understand that during the summer, during the height of the summer season when it's the busiest, we are putting trams out the door, fully loaded trams, every 3 minutes. So whatever we do with Battlestar Galactica has to be under 3 minutes, you know, because there's another tram coming over the hill. And so the maximum length for what they could do with Battlestar Galactica was going to be 2 minutes and 45 seconds. And then there was the whole notion of, it's like, okay, you want to have, you know, what Jay had envisioned was, you know, we're going to send the tram into outer space. And it's like, no, Jay, that's not realistic. And it's like, okay, well, how about this? What if there's like a UFO on the ground and the tram drives into the UFO? And then inside, you know, they get caught between this pitch space battle between, I guess the humans were called the Colonial Warriors, and the robots were the Cylons. And again, you got to remember, this is 78, 79, where they're making up the plans and they get ready to build this thing. And Jay's talking about, you know, let's do laser battles. And it's like, Jay, you understand they do that in post-production? You know, that's a special effect that somebody does at the desk. They don't actually do that on the set. And so, how would we actually do that inside of the building? And it's like, well, we'd have to use real lasers. And it was one of these things where it's like, this is the early, early days of you know, laser use. And so, you know, the... in order to even, you know, I mean, they wound up creating two different sets of lasers. They had a set of blue and green beams that ran on 22 watts and then a red laser that ran on 5 watts. But even then, they had to put all these safety protocols in place to the effect of if the tram drove a little too close to one of the lasers, the entire scene, the Battle of Galactica scene on the tram tour would shut down and they'd have to dump the building and reset. So, you know, so they had to put the fear of God into the tram drivers. Like, as you're going into the building, you will stay, you know, right here. And more to the point, in order to get clearance to use these lasers, they had to reach out to the U.S. Bureau of Radiological Health, which at that time, these were the folks who were literally in charge of public use of lasers. They had to come out to Universal Studios, and after touring the Battle of Galactica show building, they had to sign off on all the safety protocols. Anyway, long story short, Dustin, Universal pours nearly $3 million into the construction of this 2-minute and 45-second long addition to the tram tour, with some of that going to a 16-track directional soundtrack, which, thanks to the Universal Sensoround system, I don't know if you remember the movie Earthquake that Universal released to theaters in 74, but that was the whole gimmick of it. They had these low-frequency speakers that they'd put in theaters, and whenever, you know, the earthquake occurred on screen, they'd fire these things up, and you'd be rocked in your seats. But anyway,
that sounds like a great idea for one, but I could just imagine as soon as a theater owner has this this proposal saying, "Hey, we want everyone to put these additions into your movie theater," and the response is, "Well, for how many movies?" And they say, "Oh, just for the one." I could just imagine that conversation would go very quickly.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that, because there was a movie that Universal put out, I want to say 75, 76, called Roller Coaster, with Timothy Bottoms as a sort of a Unabomber who, you know, was blackmailing the amusement park industry. And it's a fascinating film to watch now. Because, A, again, they tried to shoehorn in these sensor-around scenes for the very same reason you're talking about. You know, theaters had this equipment lying around, and it's like, look, we installed it for Earthquake. What else are we using these things for? But at the same time, what's amazing is that you get to see what amusement parks looked like in the 70s. I mean, a lot of this was actually shot at Magic Mountain out in California, and just to see that park during its early days again is pretty cool. Anyway, okay, so, you know, again, they installed the sensor around the building, so, you know, when the Cylons fire off their laser cannons, you can feel it in your chest. But the irony is, here's MCA Recreation blowing through $3 million as it rushes to get a Battlestar Galactica attraction, you know, on the route of the Universal Tram Tour, you know, hoping to take advantage of the high ratings that this ABC series is garnering. But as 1978 gives way to 1979, and we've gone from our trio of TV movies to a weekly series, the ratings for the Battlestar Galactica, the TV show, start to tank. And then when you factor in that each hour of the sci-fi show cost $1 million to make, well, ABC wasn't going to tolerate that. It was an expensive to make show, and if it wasn't holding the ratings, they weren't going to stick with it, which is why April of 1979, ABC cancels Battlestar Galactica. And how would you like to be Jay Stein, who's $3 million in at that point, you know, with his Battle of Galactica scene, you know, which doesn't even go live at Universal's, you know, the part of the tram tour to June 9th of that year. So, you know, it's a full, you know, 6 weeks or thereabouts after the show's been canceled and gone off the air. Even so, I mean, a lot of people even today talk about that this was an impressive addition to the tram tour, especially in the late 70s. You know, your tram rolled up to the thing, and there were two animatronic Cylons manning a laser cannon outside the show building. And And you know, I've got the script here. It's so the tram driver, you come up over the hill and is like, wait a minute, there's some sort of spaceship blocking the road. And then the centurion who's working the cannon says, halt, foolish humans. You have blundered into a Cylon batter zone. You are now our prisoners. Do not attempt to escape or we will blast you. And tram driver is, we're not going into that spaceship. What's going on here? And so now the cannon goes off. And the alien land vehicle, there was an effect, the cannon fired and there was a rock across the way that would then smoke. And the centurion at this point is like, move. And the tram driver is like, yes, sir, whatever you say. Door to the show building opens up. And tram drivers, you're rolling in, is giving you the necessary exposition. It's like, it seems we're being captured by a Cylon battleship. What will happen inside is anyone's guess. Anyway, you're inside. You're surrounded by these now 18 different animatronics. And by your command, this group of very strange-looking Earth creatures have been captured while attempting a sneak attack on our battleship. Their general is called Tour Guide. And Tour Guide goes, General, I'm not a general. We weren't attacking anything, were we, folks? It's silent, foolish mortal. Your fate is sealed. And so at this point, the Cylons decide they're going to blast off. So they kick on the sense around speakers, and you're feeling the ship getting ready to take off. And now light comes in from a door that's open on the outside, and a colonial warrior runs inside and begins firing his pistol, and you now get those laser effects I was talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. And the colonial warrior at one point turns to the tour guide and says, get out of here, I'll be all right. And so he fires a blaster at a door, which opens at the back of the show building, and your driver's like, let's get out of here. And so you roll back out, and you're rolling back down the hill to continue your tram tour, and it's like, ladies and gentlemen, we have just survived the Battle of Galactica, inspired by the television series Battlestar Galactica. So,
and that's when people wish that they were 20 years in advance, where they had cell phones that they could look up Wikipedia and be like, Battlestar Galactica, wasn't that canceled 2 weeks ago?
Well, you know, interesting thing is, if you go over to YouTube, you can, there's a wonderful commercial that they did for the summer of 79. Likewise, there's a couple of really decent videos of what this attraction was like. And then you have weird things like there was a Get Smart movie that Don Adams starred in called The Nude Bomb, where basically the entire finale of the film is set on the Universal backlot. And at one point you have Don Adams, you know, duking it out, you know, inside of the Battle of Galactica show building, mind you, you know, being very careful about where he steps because of those lasers. But anyway, all right, Battle of Galactica rages at Universal Hollywood from all the way through to 1992, where then, because the Universal Creative needed that portion of the tram tour so they could then install supporting footers for the Southern California version of Back to the Future the Ride, which then wouldn't open until June of 1993. So this show building gets flattened. Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing is that it's not all of it gets tossed into the trash. In fact, there was one Cylon that appears to have escaped the destruction. Veteran Universal Studios Hollywood team members still talk about what happened in the mid-'80s, where one morning when the tram tour was getting started up for the day, one of the team members noticed that, you know, again, remember, there's this pair of Cylons that are, you know, outside of the show building that have that laser cannon that, you know, they aim at the people in the tram tour. But anyway, they come in one morning, and now there's only one Cylon sitting in the laser cannon. And upon closer inspection, somebody in the dark of night had gone over and unscrewed, you know, one of the Cylons, pulled it out and speared it away under, you know, the cloak of darkness. So for all you know, Wonders of Life fans out there, Buzzy was not the first to get carried away. This Cylon takes precedent. He, you know, this was the first to be carried off by a super fan.
Yeah.
And look, at least I hope that's what happened here, that a team member took a Cylon home? Because I don't know how enthusiastic I am about the idea of animatronic achieves sentience and then walks off the lower lot to terrorize the people of Toluca Lake.
So a mix of iRobot and, Transformers, or The Simpsons, when they go to, Cresty Land. No, not Cresty Land. Itchy and Scratchy Land, where all of the animatronics and everything come to life because of a manufacturing error. But it was funny, when you and I were talking about this before, there was a lot of conversation about what would happen with the Cylons as soon as Back to the Future went in to that space. And it was really cool because it looks like one of the Cylons actually showed up back in early 2014. And I'm just doing a quick thing just to make sure that I'm getting everything correct, but it looks like it came back for a behind the scenes of Universal Pictures, which actually opened in the former Lucy A Tribute Museum. And it was all about basically everything that had happened within the Universal tour.
Yeah, I want to say I think I got to see the iteration of this. This was set up for the year of the 50th anniversary of the tram tour.
Yeah, and it closed September 2015.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, all right. Maybe that was the other Cylon. Maybe they saved him out of the laser cannon. By the way, 1992 was not the end of Battlestar Galactica at the Universal Parks. Universal Studios Singapore, which had its grand opening in May of 2011, they wanted to cash in on the popularity of the Battlestar Galactica revival, mm-hmm. which Sci-Fi Channel aired from 2003 to 2009. So when that theme park opened, it had a dueling coaster themed around this Battlestar Galactica revival reimagining. And the gimmick is, for example, remember when we were talking about dueling dragons, where you mm-hmm. could choose to ride the ice dragon or the fire dragon. In this version, you could choose whether or not you rode on the human side or the Cylon side. Only problem with this coaster, Dustin, is it was plagued with technical issues. In fact, kind of interesting, if you type in, Battlestar Galactica coaster, you actually come across stories where they talk about how seats flew out of the coaster.
Oh, wow.
Not with people in them, mind you, just they were testing them for the day, and a seat came flying out. And so at one point between 2013 and 2015, this coaster was closed for two solid years while repair crews tried to sort out why the seat supports on this Battlestar Galactica-themed, dueling coaster, they kept cracking. Anyway, it's problem fixed. It's a favorite over at the Singapore Park now. And the interesting thing is that Universal Pictures is eyeballing reviving Battlestar Galactica yet again, only this time as a series of theatrical movies. December last year, the studio hired Jay Basu to rewrite a script that Lisa Joy, she's one of the co-creators of HBO's Westworld revival. Jay's rewriting Lisa's script. And just so you know, folks, what's kind of interesting about this is this big screen version of Galactica isn't taking its inspiration from the Sci-Fi Channel 2003 revival, but rather what J.A. Larson wanted to do back in 79. They're finally circling back on his trilogy idea. So look, folks, if you like today's feature piece, this is the kind of stories that Dustin and I will be sharing at our holiday event at the Universal Orlando Resort, which the nice folks at Storybook Destinations are setting up. This is happening mid-November, Dustin, right?
Yep. So Friday, November 15th through until Monday, November the 18th. All of the information is all over at storybookdestinations.com. All you have to do is click up in the top under the Jim Hill / Disney Dish section. And yeah, amazing stuff. We're going to be doing a lot of conversation in the parks, as well as you know, we have a tour of Universal Studios Florida and Islands of Adventure, which I'm assuming we're going to be seeing a lot of construction with Jurassic Park slash World slash Coaster that's coming up. And yeah, just a lot of holiday experiences. We're going to be checking out the Universal's Holiday Parade featuring Macy's, as well as the Grinchmas Hooliday Spectacular. Lots of information. Just head over to storybookdestinations.com for all the information, and definitely stay tuned to social media, because we're going to be talking a lot about some of the experiences that we're going to be doing down there closer to the event. But you definitely want to be there.
Here's hoping. Okay, so that's going to do it for this week's Universal Giant, folks. But if you can't wait till we do another show, which will probably be in about 2 weeks' time. Dustin, where can they find you online?
So I'm over at stepstomagic.com, trip planning, Disney and Universal. I'm also over at the We Like Theme Parks podcast, which is basically, you know, just three guys talking about theme parks, news, ideas, armchair imagineering, that kind of stuff. So I'm over there, but mostly if you are interested in Universal stuff, I've got some really good articles over at stepstomagic.com, including something that is very relevant for folks going down in August, and it's about attractions that you can get soaked on. So definitely check that out. Yeah, Islands of Adventure is definitely a place where you want to bring a towel with you.
This is true. Okay, on my side of the fence, the usual pile of crud, folks. We've got the Disney Dish podcast I do with Len Testa. We've got Fine Tuning with Drew Taylor, looking at Lucasfilm with Dan Zaher. We've got the marvelous Disney podcast that I do with Aaron Adams. And coming up shortly, we're going to have the next edition of I Want That, which I do with Michelle Valladolid, and we are talking about Disney merch. Tell you what, folks, if you could do both Dustin and I a favor, if you could head over to iTunes and rate and recommend our individual podcasts, we'd really appreciate that. Likewise, if you really, really, really like what we do here, if you get over to Bandcamp and subscribe, that helps keeps the lights on. And I think that's going to do it for now, Dustin. But, you know, knowing Universal, we'll still have plenty to talk about when we're back here in 2 weeks' time. Okay. Okay. And if you really, really, really like what we do here, folks, head over to Bandcamp and subscribe. That helps keep the lights on. And I guess that's going to do it for this edition of the Universal Joint, though. Knowing Universal, by the time we get back here with a new show, there will be lots more to talk about.
Absolutely.